All right. Hey, everybody. Alex Shaw here with your Risk Matters podcast, joined today by our regular Jimbo Redman, but our guest, Stefan Spagina, who's the vice president of safety and operations for the Caton companies. Stefan, thanks for hopping in with us today on kind of a whim.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Of course. So would you mind starting with, and you'll want to hold the mic up a little closer, would you mind starting with some of your background, like what your backstory is, and then that'll lead us up to today.
Your risk journey.
Your risk journey.
Oh, my God. I can do that. Sometimes I have trouble keeping it to a short story, and a lot of times it has to kind of go way back. So for me, it really starts just the way I was raised, where I was raised. I'm from Western Pennsylvania, grew up in a very blue-collar family. I have a dad and uncles. They were all union carpenters, laid off a lot during the winter, so they did a lot of residential and light commercial construction. So I grew up doing that before I even got paid to do that. worked in labor pretty much my entire life. As soon as I, got a license and started making money on my own, and worked for a lot of small companies doing, miscellaneous stuff, construction, general industry, working on semi trucks. I was a welder fabricator for a couple years. Got laid off in 08 during the recession, and was going to school for business management. Took a safety class, intro to safety management, and coincidentally, that previous weekend I had worked in a trench. So I was, to keep a long story short, we were doing some plumbing work to install an outdoor wood burner furnace and tie it into the house. And I worked about a 12, 14-hour day. Didn't really think anything of it at the time. Long day, made some bucks, and went back to college that night. And that Monday, actually, we learned about trenching and excavating. And we reviewed two case studies on fatalities, neither of which were in scenarios that were more dangerous than what I was in the previous Saturday, though I had no poor result of my circumstance. I actually left that day, went home, and really, in hindsight, I was ignorant to the risk. And I might have thought it wasn't the most safe job in the world, right? But that day, that Monday, I learned very differently. So that was kind of a catalyst for me. And that's kind of what got me into safety, right? So I was about 3/4 of the way done through college, switched my major, still working on the side on semi-trucks, and finished out my degree, jumped into heavy civil construction with an internship in Ohio, moved to Virginia, fall of 2012, and really haven't looked back since. I've generally been in heavy civil construction and some commercial and some little bit of general industry as well.
Well, your experience, before we get too far, is a little term we coined some years ago, the power of no result. And that just means that people do risky stuff, put themselves in the line of fire, so to speak, all the time, whether it's texting and driving, which would probably be the most mainstream example, but nothing happens. And so they sort of get desensitized to the risk. If they ever had any sensitivities to it at all, which in your case, maybe you didn't, what changed that was that something came along in the course that you were taking that opened your eyes to it, which most people never have. So it's just an interesting phenomenon.
Well, that's one of the it reminds me of something that Bo Izzard from our team has said for many years. And he's very, he'll tell you, pedantic about many things, but language being one of them, being precise in your speech, being important. And he'll tell you there's no such thing as risk prevention. You don't prevent risk. Risk is constant. Risk is ever present. What you try to do is manage it to a certain degree. What you try to do, some would say, is control and control it. What we would say is you want to perform in it, hence our name, risk performance. One of the things that also caught my attention is, so you had no, there was, as Jimbo said, there was no result, no negative consequence from your experience. And that is the way that most enterprises or organizations, that's how they operate every single day. The question is, are you designed to learn when there is an adverse event? It reminds me of coaching my daughter's soccer team. we won our first game, and I walked away, and I thought, well, that was pretty cool. That was interesting. That feels good to win the first one. The second game, we got absolutely smoked. And it was in that loss that I recognized so many patterns that we needed to work on specifically. So I customized the practice the next time to challenge them a little bit more, to be a little more aggressive, actually to understand the basic rules of the game. Because at 6 years old, I realized they actually don't know any of the rules. So that was a starting place. But we only learned that through a loss. And so as a company, kind of interesting to hear, it wasn't your company, but you went out and performed the work, no consequence. Then you heard two case studies of a consequence, no different than the environment that you were operating in. I'd be curious to hear, in your existing role, how you guys leverage kind of the experience of the collective to inform how work gets done at each individual site, so that when you have a negative consequence, it doesn't just domino and happen at every single job or on every single team.
We definitely, at the Caton Companies, do our best to make sure that those scenarios are shared, globally or company-wide, rather. I think that the important thing to do is always evaluate your situation, whether it's an incident, whether it's a near miss, whether it's just a safety observation that's reported, is to look at the potential, right? And that's the scenario that I found myself in. It's the potential of what could have happened. It didn't. But I don't know if the moment that we backfilled that trench wasn't 3 minutes away from a cave-in, right? Mm. And we would all be looking at that scenario very differently. So the potential can remain the same even if the result is catastrophic or non-existent, right? Everybody just thought it was a good day. So we do take a look when we're out on job sites and we do get reports of near misses or unsafe conditions. We view it for the true potential of what could have happened. And that's how we want to get that information out to our employees to say, hey, look, this is the scenario that we found employees in or they reported themselves in, right? And here's what really could happen. And it didn't, but we need to look at it at the severity that's possible because that's what we're planning against, not nothing happened, everything's okay, or else that wouldn't change the way we work.
So people's willingness to report near misses and close calls to you guys. So one, interested in what medium you use to receive that, but is that a consequence of culture or is that a consequence of safety culture?
Good question. Now I'll get kind of opinionated on this. I think culture is all inclusive. I think it's very difficult to just take a look at your safety culture without looking at your overall culture. It's all encompassing. And safety is just part of, in my opinion, who you are, what you do, your morals, your values, your standards, right? So in taking a look at the safety culture, in regard to how the employees are involved and submit it, it has to do with top-down management and buy-in and how it's promoted and expected from employees and how they are valued in their participation and how it can benefit others truly, right? And it's how we lead that and it's how we manage the program, make sure they feel seen and heard. So if you want me to get into how they report it, I can.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a couple comments. One, I'm going to go back a little bit, which is you talked about potential, you talked about near misses, and I happen to believe that that's a concept that people miss, and that is, to me, being in that unprotected trench is a near miss. Just the potential was the near miss. There doesn't need to be, the top started to shake or cave in or it started raining or, none of that has to happen. And I think that's a concept that a lot of organizations don't get. They think there has to be some sort of action, if you will. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said potential. So that's one. And then two, I don't know if it was a loaded question by Alex. I'm sure it was. But what I heard you say is that really it's just culture, and culture, corporate culture dictates whether it really values safety, and the concepts of what that mean in terms of taking care of the workforce, or not so much. And so it's not sort of like, oh, well, we've got this thriving culture over here for production and quality and customer service, and then over here we've got this safety culture that sort of is maybe not so great.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I am curious about that, because we've talked over the years the term safety culture, I mean, the tongue-in-cheek is safety culture is nothing more than cultural appropriation. The joke I've always used is, you know, if you've got a high school girlfriend and it's not working out that great, getting married doesn't solve that. So if your culture is a little bit toxic, or if it's struggling, it doesn't get better by adding something else onto it, you know, by adding this notion of safety culture onto it. It's are we keen and interested in being really good at what we do?
Agreed.
Okay, what are the people who are really good at what they do? How do they operate? Well, it's with precision, it's with integrity, it's with a keen attention to detail, it's with a mindset of continuous improvement. And typically, a mindset of continuous improvement doesn't involve getting more productive and more efficient at the work while also killing more people. It's usually reducing injuries, getting more productive, getting more efficient, enhancing the morale and the quality of life of the people while they're at work. And a big component of that is winning hearts and minds. And you only do that with their input, with them having a little equity. And so you were kind of speaking to some of the ways that you encourage folks to report and get involved and learn. So maybe if you wouldn't mind sharing some of the things that you're working on, recognizing that this is a continuum and that it's never perfect, and that we take two steps forward and one step back. But would love to hear about some of the efforts you've got. Shoot, maybe some of the things you've tried that haven't worked, and then some of the things you've tried that are seem to be working well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's always a moving target, right? There's always things we could do different or better, and we make those changes, right? But I think one of the key elements, and you could take a look at studies, and you could take a look at culture just about anywhere, and you would see that even at a company where the very top of the company, you know, has a certain set of values, expectations, morals, guidelines, if they're not managed and upheld at the middle management level, it falls, right?
Yeah.
So
that's a great point.
To me, that
yeah.
is something that is most important, and that we, you know, we focus on, and is a core value to us, is that, you know, we're making sure that our mid-level managers, while yes, they're looking at production and they're looking at all the other things that matter, right? At the end of the day, we want to be excellent, right? That is our cultural goal, and that's not on paper, right? That's not, you can't quote that, but we want to be excellent, right? And safety is part of that. So while we're talking to our middle managers about how, you know, the projects are going or how the properties are being managed and whatnot, we're still talking to them about how they're leading their people, how they're showing genuine care and concern for their people, setting them up for success, and how they, right, not just the safety department within the company, are promoting our program of reporting near misses, negative and positive safety observations, and lastly, safety suggestions, right? So we make sure that our mid-level managers understand that, with respect, if you want to be here, because we want you to be here, then you have to love what we're trying to do, because you're an extension of upper management. As it flows down, we need to make sure that we are rolling these things out, that we're upholding them, that we're supporting them, that we're fostering the engagement with the same mindset and clarity as you know, theoretically, you know, our CEO would, right? She can't be everywhere at once. So that's something that we focus on. I think it also comes back to making sure, and this is going to sound tough, but that we hire the right people. So we make sure that talking about our expectations for excellence and safety and, you know, who you are and what you expect out of an employee are relatively in alignment before we start, because there could be a case where it's not, and that would be tough, you know, tough to work out in and of itself. But as far as, you know, the program goes, you know, it's pretty cool in that we have the ability to use technology, and we have our employees, you know, report these events on a daily basis, and every week we are reviewing these observations, you know, between the safety team and operations, and you know, providing, you know, whatever the corrective action is, if there is one. Some of the times they're just corrected in the field, right? But if we have to get involved, we do, at least to say a thank you. And then, you know, every Friday, every observation that's sent in throughout the entire company is reviewed at every location within the company. So you have a maximum lag time of 11 days before you as an employee who put something that you experienced or an idea that you have, you submit that to the company. It's a maximum of 11 days before everybody else in the company hears about it. Hmm. And, you know, for us, it keeps it pretty real time. And it allows us to show that we, you know, we care about the input from our employees and that we actually do something about it.
Well, if the ultimate currency of managing risk is how the work gets done, then you make a very valuable point, which is if you don't have the people who are managing how the work gets done on the train, it's pretty difficult to improve, dictate, transform how the work does get done.
Yeah, and if they're, and it's also hard. I mean, how many employees do you have total at this point?
All of the Caton companies combined around 430 employees right now.
Yeah, so it's a decent sized company, and so if you also don't have visibility into how people live out those expectations that are modeled by leadership and that middle management is expected to model as well, via engaging with that type of platform. Like, I'd imagine that you've got some teams or crews who you get these, you know, bits of feedback from pretty frequently, and then others you don't hear anything from. And that in its own right is a little bit of a measure and a calibration. Yep. And just an opportunity for you to have visibility into, man, what is everybody doing out there? And what do their job sites look like? And I haven't heard anything from this job in a year. Let me go check to see if things really are perfect out there. And if they're not, it's a coaching opportunity. I love how you guys have used technology over the years. Well, maybe you could speak to what you use currently, any that you've tried in the past for measurement. I mean, there's so many out there, be it Industry Safe or Safety Culture or KPA Flex or HCSS or HSCC.
Yeah, that's actually what you're using.
Okay. Yeah, tell me how you guys landed with that and how you use it.
So HCSS is a pretty familiar software system used with the civil construction industry. So one of the group companies within the Caton companies is CCG, Caton Construction Group. So that's where that software onus comes from. Mm-hmm. That group company is using it, and the platform is excellent. So we just use the same platform across all companies. Even though typically it's only used for heavy civil, it works very well for the other business units. Okay. And allows everything to remain consistent. And that software is pretty neat. You know, it's the same software that our field managers are using on their iPads, their phones, you know, project managers and above. There's a desktop version with all kinds of different, you know, availability for them. But at the, you know, field employee level, which is most notably where it's used for safety observations and near misses, there's a QR code that we post around everywhere. We actually have QR stickers on hard hats for safety observations. That way, when your guy walks, you know, when your friend or coworker walks past you and you see it, it could remind you to pull out your phone if it's lunch break or before work, after work, and just scan it real quick. It pulls up a website on a smartphone, and within about a minute, you can have that submission entered. Really simple stuff.
And yeah, so what are the what are some of the, besides the safety observation reports, what are some of the different data points or measures that that you guys are reviewing each week just to gauge your performance from a risk management perspective?
We're trying to look mainly at our leading indicators, right? So we look a lot at our training. You know, how much training have we got done in a proactive way? We're looking at our field-level supervisors. Are they completing the training that they need to on a weekly basis? They have, you know, a proactive training every Monday. They have a lessons learned review every Wednesday so that we can take a look at a previous event that's happened and, you know, remember what not to do or how to do it better in the future, right? And then reviewing these safety observations. So that's one metric we gauge with our supervisors. And are they leading effective meetings? Are they going over the right things with their employees? Because that can be what changes culture a lot, right?
Yeah, what so that you mentioned something that caught my attention, and it's back to the original where we started, which is tapping into the intellectual capital that exists within your organization so that there isn't a domino effect of everybody making the same mistake over and over and over. One team or crew makes that mistake or learns that lesson, and then the rest are the beneficiaries of that knowledge so they don't repeat the same thing. But we constantly need to revisit the history and the backstory. And you mentioned lessons learned as kind of an every Wednesday. Yeah, I think that's what you had mentioned.
Yep.
So talk to me a little bit more about that. The, you know, every Wednesday, what does that look like? What is the content? How is that created? And then how are things added to it?
Okay. So, you know, right now we have a library. So if theoretically we never had an incident again, which obviously is our goal, right, we would have a backlogged library and we'd cycle through them based on, you know, what scopes of work are going on, what season it is, you know, what's applicable, right? We try to take a lessons learned that we feel can be the most impactful because we can't share everyone every time. But the general gist of it is, you know, when we have an incident, we recognize that generally employees are not trying to have an incident, and that humans make mistakes. I know I sound like Todd right now.
That's okay.
But yeah, we want to investigate that incident truly from all angles, from a place of being humble as well, right? To look and see where could this have went different, at what level or area, including could the safety department have done anything different? What could operations have done different? At the project level, what could have done different? We look at it and we perform a true root cause analysis, and we try to do that, you know, leave an ego on the side, right? Not having that on the table. And we try to truly look at what would we do different if we go back in time or if we did it again. We take that information and we turn it into a lessons learned. We use pictures. We create reenactments if we can. It's just a general overview of the incident. We actually don't name the employees or the area. We keep it relatively anonymous just so it doesn't, you know, feel like we're slighting anyone. But we're getting that information out there, and we talk about what happened, why, and the steps to prevent reoccurrence. And we share it every Wednesday. So if we have an incident that takes place real time, you know, we'll, as soon as we can, we get that incident investigated and we'll get that one out there. If we go a period where we do not have any incidents and there's no current events to discuss, we'll go back into our library and we'll say, hey, we think that one's really impactful. We haven't talked about that in a while. We haven't had an incident like that in a while. So let's get that one out there to everybody. We also have that in a library so that when different scopes of work come up, it's always suggested to take a look at the lessons learned before we start working. As we're looking into pre-planning our task, you know, hey, did we ever make a mistake doing this before? What should we be thinking about? So that's how we use that information.
Yeah, I think that's a huge, that's one of those fundamentals that I see, that I hear about, but I see only select companies doing. And I think there's huge and rich opportunity in leveraging the experience that you've had to coach others and remind other people. I mean, we constantly hear about toolbox talks, and if you've ever sat in on a toolbox talk, some are inspiring, most are not. Sometimes they have nothing to do with the work being done at all. You know, trenching toolbox talks for a company that does zero trenching and doesn't work around trenching, and their guys are going, what are we doing
here? When you get the silt fence and ENS toolbox talk when you're wrapping up the job.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's exactly. And so I think, and the data bears this out, and we've talked about this a little bit, and Conklin has mentioned that the most valuable thing that you can talk about with employees is how the work gets done. Right. What standard are we working towards? And in many ways, it's like my daughter's soccer game. You don't know how the work's supposed to get done until you experience the loss. And there's so many lessons in that that you just grow and evolve from that. And so kudos to you guys, for using that kind of lessons learned platform. I mean, there are many others who do it, like, you know, Luckstone's got their talk before the task, mm-hmm. and they've recently integrated that from a paper model into a software that their people, when they input the talk before the task, it compiles them with other similar tasks. And so now they're able to review those and calibrate, hey, what are the key steps, the best bets, if you will, for how to complete this work, for how to do this work effectively and as safely as possible. And those who aren't necessarily walking down that path, I think, are missing a huge opportunity for the collective learning.
I agree. And, you know, me personally, I how do I say this? I think by not reviewing the incident, especially if it's an employee injury, it kind of happened in vain. And that employee then that we say we care about, well, how much do we care about them if we're not talking to anyone else about how not to feel how they do right now?
Right.
So if we're not trying to truly learn and get that out to everybody else, I think we're missing the mark.
Tell me a little bit as we start to round this out about your team.
Well, just what pops in my head, and this is sometimes I got a real knack for the obvious, but and that is that if your mindset and your perception is that it was a mistake by an employee, then there's no onus to tell everybody else not to do that because they already know not to do that. And so there's a transition there that if you go, no, it's not an employee error. It's how the work gets done or how the work was getting done and it was reasonably expected. Then it makes sense to go, we have to let everybody know this.
That's a really good point that, you know, kind of casts a light on why maybe some folks don't do that, because it's taking ownership of the fact that maybe the employee triggered, as Conklin would say, a latent condition that already existed, a design flaw, a system failure, or, you know, our lack of training or education or whatever it might have
been. And sometimes it will do that.
And
that's why it has to be a program in humility, right? You have to be able to perform a root cause analysis knowing that you get to the end of it and say, dang, the safety team needs to do something different. It might not always, you know, there's onus shared as well, right? It could be in multiple areas, and an element might be that employee made a little bit of a mistake. But also, to me, a big part of that is why. What causal factors were involved internally or externally that mistake was made or allowed to happen, right? So to me, incident investigation can get really deep. And I think setting the stage as to why we're investigating the incident, who we are as a company, and why we're sitting here, to me, that makes a big difference. So that's the big thing that we do to start to kind of get everyone to relax and then truly get a good result out.
Well, if you want to go down into the mats of Conklin, so one of the things I had a long discussion with him about this was, is it a mistake or is it a choice? And he would argue, that it's a choice, but it's the right choice based on all the inputs and all the incentives and all the culture. And so it takes that off the table often.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And, you know, Alex, I will mention, you did talk about, planning the work, right? So I do have to mention that, we're really big on that as well. And, one thing that we're really big on is our morning huddles, right? That's what we call them, our morning huddles, right? How are we setting the tone for the day? That's when we go over those topics. That's when we do stretch and flex. That's when we talk about our work for the day, the hazards associated, what we do about it, what's our plan B, right? That way we know what to do if something comes up. And, with the construction group, those employees and their supervisors complete what's called a daily hazard analysis and, a DHA and AHA, JHA, there's a million acronyms, and you could look at them in different ways. I know there's different definitions, but at the end of the day, each day, our supervisors are taking a look at what are we doing, what could happen, and what are we doing about it, and specifically generating crew input as to how they're performing that work and, how to mitigate that risk. So that's one other key element to what we're trying to do to reduce
problems
in the field.
And all of those, what's interesting is, so our group and, Jimbo and my and others on our team, Eric Johnson, our role is to walk alongside clients and to get relatively deep with them and understand the competing forces and what we would call the forces of culture. And one of the things that we've recognized is so important is that there has to be integrity in what you say, what you do, and what people see. And so what you're referencing here is different parts of your system or design that if we were walking alongside you, we would immediately point those out and say, man, they've got these huddles. They've got these Wednesday, lessons learned reviews. They've got these safety observation reports. They've got things people submit that, you know, the lag time is only 11 days, so it's relatively real time. When I look at how we engage clients, and I've done this recently, pulled kind of maybe it was about 10, 11 clients, and I looked at when we started working with them, and then I looked at the data, you know, between 1 and 15 years down the line. And it's pretty compelling. What's tough to do is to point to any one thing that through our partnership with them was the direct line. There's only one client that I can think of where it is a direct line. We came in with a specific game plan and within 2 years had a material impact in partnership with them. The rest are we're doing surveys, we're doing ride-alongs, we're doing a day in the life where we actually work alongside employees. We're a part of their operations meeting. We're a part of their risk management meeting. We're a part of their shop and equipment foreman meetings. They come to our peer groups, our operations peer group, our shop and equipment peer group, our risk manager peer groups. So there's this integration, but I couldn't pull out one specific silver bullet. But if I had to bucket the interaction and the engagement, you would be able to see thematically that we had partnered on this relationship journey together that was born of an appetite for learning, taking action, and doing so in a community of others who were also similarly minded, attempting to force that path towards continuous improvement. And so I appreciate what I've heard you say today, just not the philosophy of it, but also in action, because I think that's what wins the day. It's the integrity of your actions and then what people experience, which, Jimbo, to your point, is it a choice or is it a mistake? Well, if you give me a new hire orientation and I'm supposed to wear my PPE constantly, but I go to the job site and literally no one else is wearing their safety glasses or their hard hat, you're darn right I'm going to make a choice, and it's going to be to follow where the culture takes me. And that's where I think there's no silver bullet where we win the day, but it's all about how are we setting the tone so, to your point, we hire the right people.
And we talk about that a lot, not to cut you off.
No, go right ahead.
And it's bigger than just the safety glasses, because one saying that I've often said, and not that I'm perfect at this, right, but I think about it all the time, and we talk about it a lot, is how you do one thing is how you do all things. So it's bigger than the safety glasses. If you tell me that you wear glasses and everyone wears glasses and I get out there and no one's wearing glasses, it's bigger than just that element. You're also telling me that something that's huge to your company isn't taking place and nobody cares. And there's more than one thing like that, if there's one thing like that.
Right. Yeah. That's a little bit like the forklift driver who drives without a seatbelt for all time. And then as soon as he gets hurt, I mean, we've heard this, the plant foreman will go, that guy's an idiot. And I'm dumb enough to oftentimes push back and say, was that the first time he didn't wear a seatbelt? Or was that the first? I've been here and seen you see him without the seatbelt, but he's an idiot because of the negative consequence.
Right. And that's where, you know, to us, I think we try to be, you know, unwavering, right? But that doesn't mean that you need to have a culture that feels that it's harsh, right? It can be with a smile, right? We could look at somebody and say, hey, love you. That's not what we do here. And you know that, right? Because, you know, we want to be consistent and unwavering, but that doesn't mean that almost said tough. Yeah, we'd be tough, right? But we're not mean, right? It's a good culture. You should want the same things that we want. And that's what we're trying to promote, is the why. Right. And something that we say sometimes is safe isn't soft. Right. So we don't just tell people what they need to do or what the rule is. We're trying to explain to them why, and then why they should care. And we put a lot of effort into changing minds and building those relationships. And I think that's key.
Well, where I'll let you have the final word. Where are you guys headed? I mean, what are some of the strengths, the weaknesses, the opportunities that you see in the years to come as you continue to build your team? You know, you started in the safety, you know, running the safety and risk team, but then have been, you know, as your title would demonstrate, pulled into the operations, which I think is a beautiful integration, as Conklin would say. You know, in the best organizations, the lines between risk or safety and operations are blurred. They're integrated. So where do you see your team evolving and your efforts evolving to, and I guess what's next?
Cool. That's a loaded question.
Yeah.
So
we're going to check back in with you.
I'm in operations with the construction group, right? I will have to say that I'm not in operations with the other companies within the Caton companies. And, you know, our team right now, I believe I'm blessed. We have an awesome team. The safety professionals with the Caton companies are some of the best I've ever worked with. You know, we're just going to continue to keep growing. Our newest employee has been here since April, so we're going to, you know, have him keep growing with the team and developing and building relationships. And, you know, as far as specific goals, we want to be more proactive. We want to continue to engage with our employees, provide more training, and get out there at the front line and make sure that we're building good relationships and we're I guess solidifying our culture where I know that our safety professionals show up and it's not people going, oh man, the safety guy's here. They're saying, oh cool, right? Alan's here or Jonathan's here or Aaron's here, right? And so that's what we want to keep doing. We want to keep growing our safety professionals also in understanding the work as well. The more that our safety team can get involved proactively in the work, understanding the work, knowing the work, and caring about the work, the better we can be. Because at the end of the day, right, we have a job to do, and we're not going to waver on our values or our commitments. But at the end of the day, we are there to be a safe, quality, productive company, right? So the safety team getting involved at all levels proactively allows us to be a good teammate and be a good team member to keep things moving. And that's what theoretically we want, right? So that's what we'll continue to do.
Man, I love that, and it's pretty topical, and I don't know why, but we found ourselves in recent months as a part of kind of visioning, planning, and looking into the future with several clients, and one of the themes that's come out is if you ask them, where are we going? Like, as we set forth and cast this vision, it's like if I said, hey, Stefan, hop in the truck with me, the first question you would ask would be, where are we going? So we're trying to get people pulled alongside us and moving towards in the future with us. So where are we going? And the response has been largely, we want to be fully integrated with the operations team. We want to be seen as an asset. Well, how do you get there? And what's beautiful about how the conversation's evolved is it's been a recognition that not only do we need to define for operations how the work gets done so they can convey that to employees, but we ourselves need to understand how the work gets done. And there's some fun little activities we're doing to really bear that out that I won't go into the detail here, but your vision is in complete alignment with so many of the outfits that we're working with who are really leading edge and on the frontier, if you will, of modern day risk management.
Awesome.
And I think if you take the, I don't know what the proper word is, but if you take the counter to pretty much everything you said, it's what sort of companies are struggling with, right? It's, yeah, we don't want those guys coming out on our job site.
Mm-hmm.
The owner, he doesn't interact with the safety team. The CFO, he writes their check, but he doesn't talk to them. and on down the list. And, oh, yeah, we don't bring all our employees together. You know, we don't have the time or energy to do that. And so I think what you hear, what we see a lot is companies struggling with all the aspects of the things that you're sort of, you know, two thirds of the way up the hill with. And so that's cool.
I would agree with that. You know, and I would have to say there's, you know, a lot of individuals involved that it wouldn't be able to be possible, right? You know, you got our CEO, Diane Caton, right? Her vision of what this company should be, and in many ways, right, always, is incredible, right? But for how to treat employees and her value of safety, it's unwavering. You know, Gary, our COO, rather, you know, him and Rick, they're, you know, obviously Rick, is largely involved with risk as well. So I don't want to say that I'm the only guy, right? But the way that they lead and the way that they're involved, it wouldn't be possible without them. So, you know, it takes a team, and I think we have a really awesome team for that. And that's never been the issue here, is that separation, right? It is just important at all levels. And that's why it's our responsibility to make sure at the field level we're carrying that.
Well, a good team recognizes they win together and they lose together, and it behooves each team member to encourage and drive the other on. Yeah. And so, as a part of your team, we just appreciate you being willing to come in and talk with us and encourage us. Frankly, we're most inspired by seeing what our clients are doing out there and learning some of the leading edge ways that they're operating and pushing the envelope and being the practitioners in that. And so thanks for spending some time out of your day, and hope your visit to your job site this afternoon goes smoothly with maybe a little bit of rain, but not too much.
Yeah, it doesn't look too bad. Yeah, it was a pleasure. I really appreciate you guys having me down here.
Yeah, thanks for stopping in, and we had a live audience today of one. Thanks for joining us, Eric.
Heck yeah. Thanks, well, Eric. Appreciate everybody listening in, and look forward to hearing all the feedback from this one. And we'll catch you next time. All right. Take care.
Thanks.